the week known as SEC Media Days finally in the rearview mirror. Did you learn much of anything other than we're all glad that 1,200 plus credentialed and telling how many fans that is now behind us?
Yeah, I learned not to be in a lobby on Thursday morning.
Good move. Good
I'm
call.
If I'm trying to get to the escalator.
Yeah.
That was a good learning experience in my first SEC Media Days. But, I think one, people have asked me, hey, what do you gather from SEC Media Days, sort of in the macro sense? And I feel like two things sort of go hand in hand. Number one, you're looking at a league that's really lacking in stars, and that doesn't mean talent. I mean, there's plenty of talent. We know it's the most talented league in the country. But there is no Clowney, no Manziel, so much turnover at the quarterback position across the league. There's that part of it. And what goes hand in hand with that is, and what was interesting to me is, when the league is that way, and it's rare, but when the league is that way and there's a lot of unknowns and there's a lot of questions on every team, Alabama included, that it looks like the default is to pick Alabama to win the league when it's that. And that's because of Nick Saban, and that's because of the way he recruits. But, of course, they overwhelmingly, 150, so more than half of the media votes to win the league, and I think the next closest was Auburn at 75. So they had doubled up the second place team in terms of votes to win a league. Now, this is also coming from a media contingent who has picked the champion four times out of the last 22 years, so maybe that's not a good thing. But I think, the macro part of it, I think, was interesting to me is with the lack of stars, with the lack of a team coming back that you feel is overwhelmingly better than anybody else, I think you default towards Alabama until you're proven otherwise.
I want to get back to what we actually get from there and kind of go forward with Alabama, but I had forgotten completely that this was your first SEC football media day. Shed some light on just how different it was yesterday and today in Greensboro, North Carolina for ACC media days compared to what you endured last week.
Yeah, that's funny. Different things, and selfishly from a media perspective in terms of, like, me getting my job done, obviously the fewer credentials there are and the fewer people standing in my way with signs in the lobby, actually that wasn't a big nuisance, but you know, just fewer distractions, all that stuff, it's just easier getting the job done when there's fewer people. For example, the last 2 years, again, covering Florida State, I mean, we would sit at a round table with Jimbo Fisher, a big round table, probably 10, 12 people, and people would come in and out throughout the hour, but the FSU beat writers, you could just fire away for an hour, on anything. I mean, we started getting into freshmen and how they look and what do you look for when you're recruiting quarterbacks. And, I mean, you can really dive in really more than you can all year. And obviously that's not the case at SEC Media Days because there's so much attention and so many media credentials and you're lucky to get a question in,
right,
before the guy leaves the main podium. So, selfishly, the ACC Media Days makes it easier to do our job. However, there's no doubt that being at, Media Days that has so much attention and so many people care about it, it's not in a hotel in Greensboro, North Carolina. There isn't one fan there. I mean, if you were a fan of Miami or FSU or Boston College, and you could walk right in, sit in the lobby, and talk to anybody you wanted. I mean, there's not one person there. So the intrigue of covering something that is, there's so much passion for. I mean, here we are weeks away from the start of the season, and you've got 500 people or whatever it was, 300 people in a lobby, just to get a glimpse at a head coach. I mean, that's pretty cool, too. So, logistically, perhaps a little easier when there's less attention and less people care about it, but certainly fun to be at the top of the mountain, if you will, in terms of what you're covering and knowing that whatever you're writing, so many people care about.
D.C. Reeves, Tuscaloosa News and TideSports.com joining us here on Tide 99.1. What does it say about the SEC that they had the 4 days that they did last week? ESPN, basically ESPNU, going wall-to-wall with its coverage now all day long of the Southeastern Conference. Four straight days. of programming from whatever time the event started until it was over, okay? They follow that up with two consecutive days in Bristol of the car wash coverage. Half the league's coaches today, tomorrow starting with Nick, among them Nick Saban, they're basically taking over ESPN for 6 days, 6 weekdays out of seven consecutively. What in the world does all that mean? And especially, what do you think if you're sitting there as the commissioner of the Pac-12 or the Big Ten and you're watching all of this?
Yeah, or the ACC, while you're having your media days, they've got half of the league coaches at ESPN.
Right.
That probably rubs them the wrong way. Not that they would ever say anything to their biggest money provider for all these leagues, for the most part. So they probably, protest very, very quietly. But I think it says two things. Number one, ESPN obviously knows what sells, and that's funny you hear, whether it's message boards or anything else, you know, people will say, oh, why is ESPN, you know, they have a bias towards SEC, or, you know, they put them on instead of the ACC media days. Well, look, they're in the business of making money and selling advertising for as much as they possibly can. And then, yeah, sometimes they put things on because of contracts that perhaps don't have ratings. You know, you might have a contract with, you know, hey, just at the U.S. Open golf, you've got to put on the Women's U.S. Open, and maybe the Women's U.S. Open doesn't have their same ratings, but that's part of the contract. But other than that, you know, they know what sells, and they know what people are watching. And at the end of the day, they know that there's so much attention around the SEC media days versus if a coach from Syracuse or Rutgers or Maryland is on. I mean, it's not nearly the same. I think that's the first part. And the second part is, let's call it what it is. Again, it's a business, and they have an SEC network coming out on August 15th. So I'm sure as DirecTV is sort of the last lingering major provider that has not signed up yet, that they want to get as much attention towards that as they can, because they want to be in as many households as they can. So I don't think either one of those are independent of each other, but I think that explains why, especially if there was going to be an offseason where they were really going to be promoting the heck out of SEC, it would be all 4 days a year, which I think they do any year, but perhaps that Monday, Tuesday, totally overtaking some of these other leagues, is a product of the big product they have coming out.
Before Alabama got there, Alabama football was making headlines. The announcement that the title take on USC in Dallas to open the 2016 season. Ben George, who you know, does our website, wrote a piece over the weekend about how he feels like the fans are basically getting cheated by not necessarily neutral site games, but the same two locations. Dallas consecutive years, the way it'll play out, Atlanta last year and this year, and I think he correctly said, you know, that 5 consecutive years you will open the season or have one of your major early games for Alabama either in Dallas or Atlanta for a 5-year stretch. Do you think this has run or will have run its course by the time 2016 plays out? Has it already run its course? Or is this just the way they're going to do business from now on in college football as a whole?
I think it is. When that was announced, I was sort of going back and forth with some fans on Twitter about it. I covered a lot of this exact situation at Florida State at length with them because this is a discussion that has been had there. As concise as I can put it, it's this. People say, well, why don't you get USC to come in? Well, USC is not coming in to Tuscaloosa without getting a return game. So if Alabama can already have 7 home games, and then the key is the payout. The reason they're going to continue to go to Dallas and Atlanta is because they're going to be getting $4, $5, $6 million per game, which you would argue, now not counting economic impact at bars and restaurants and stuff, but just in terms of what the school brings in, I don't know the number at Alabama, but I'd be willing to guess that $4, $5, $6 million is about what they take on a home game, as it is. So the point is, if that allows them to, in essence, financially, have an 8th home game, if you will, you know, there's 7 normal home games and then play a neutral site, you can't repeat that with a home and home because, yeah, you might have USC come in, and that's great. I mean, USC over a Florida Atlantic or a Southern Miss, certainly you'll sell more tickets. You could probably sell them for more money. That could, you know, but the percentage increase over in revenue over a small Division I team in USC could never, never overtake that year you've got to go to USC and you give a game away, a road game away, and you get $0. So it's a product of the environment in college football right now. What Alabama might do and probably should do for their fans, because they're very loyal. Unlike at Florida State, you know, if the home schedule's not good, they don't sell a lot of season tickets, at least before a national championship they did. Alabama fans have been very loyal, and you wonder if eventually Alabama's going to have to look at that and say, well, we need to bite the bullet and play one of these home-and-homes, forget the extra millions of dollars that we'd be turning down just to reward our fans with a big, major out-of-conference home game. So that's the balance I think Alabama's in right now. They're in a better position financially than Florida State, so they probably have a little bit more flexibility. But it's a complicated issue, and you cannot argue financially this day and age for those neutral site games. You're always going to make more money playing neutral site versus a home and home. We know that. It's just whether Alabama wants to say, okay, let's bring a big game in here and not just have, you know, three cupcake games and then the SEC schedule and that's it. You know, let's try to reward our fans. That's the balance that we're going to have to start to keep an eye on here moving forward if Alabama wants to do that, or if they're going to continue to take the bigger checks by playing these neutral site games.
D.C. Reeves, Tuscaloosa News, and digital managing editor for TideSports.com, their website, joining us here on Tide 99.1. I do want to go back to the league that you covered for a number of years in the Atlantic Coast Conference. I talked earlier about how with Florida State winning, and not just the FSU win, but with some other non-conference victories that Clemson, Miami had last year, that the ACC is starting to look maybe more like the conference that league hoped for when they brought in, when they expanded who they were originally as a power basketball conference. Players within the league at Media Day yesterday in Greensboro said it's helped, that, you know, they carry a little more swagger themselves, even if you're North Carolina, because you're in the league with Florida State, which wins the national crown. What do you think? Was it a one-time deal? Is it still Florida State and the others and the rest? Or is this league, from what you know of it, ready to actually be a consistent player in this new college football playoff format?
Yeah, that's interesting, because I think, weirdly, about, I don't know, a few years ago, when maybe 2010, 2011, when Jimbo just got there, and they were in Florida State was winning 10, 11 games. I feel like the league as a whole, in terms of talent that they were putting in the NFL, all that stuff was actually a little bit better than they are now. But that just, what's your definition of a better league? And that everybody's is different. You know, winning a national championship and being very top-heavy with two or three teams, which is sort of the way I feel like the ACC is now, or, you know, do you have those six or seven, eight-win, nine-win, you know, strong teams that you feel like that's a better league? But nationally, of course, if you win a national championship, that's going to bring some respect to your league. But I think if you're talking about the ACC moving up among the, in terms of stature and with these BCS conferences or Power 5 conferences, I think they're going to need to be a little bit better at 2, 3, 4, and 5. Because what's going to, I think, could start happening here is if Florida State continues to dominate the league by, you know, being 2-3 touchdown favorites, it'll get back to what it was in the 90s. You know, anybody who followed Florida State remembers, I mean, they were a 4-touchdown favorite every game. You know, NC State, Wake Forest, Virginia, it didn't matter who they came. They were so much better than everybody else that basically when Florida State lost one game in the ACC, their shot at the national title was over because their schedule was so weak. So, ironically, Florida State sort of needs the league to continue to maybe not keep pace, but be close. I mean, Clemson, the team that was supposed to be undoubtedly number two, got crushed by 40 points at home against Florida State. And now you add Louisville, which I think helps the football profile. But all three of those teams are in the same division. You know, you've got Florida State, Clemson, and Louisville. And, you know, only one of them is going to be playing for the ACC championship. So, that's another challenge as well. But I think the ACC to take that next step, obviously a team winning a national championship is huge, and that's one step. I think the next one is how good can 2, 3, and 4 be, consistently? Can they be in the running for perhaps a playoff spot? I think that's where they would start to earn a little more respect. But, teams 8 through 12 or 8 through 14 now, I mean, they are really, really struggling. So, that's what they've got to be careful of, is just being a little too top-heavy without having those complementary teams make the league seem better as a whole.
DC, last thing before I let you run, shifting to baseball for a moment. Friday was a big day. It's when they had the deadline for major league teams to sign their 2014 draft picks. Will Carter is a name that probably a lot of Alabama fans didn't know before Friday. Many of them may not have heard it until just now. But the fact that he did not sign with the team that drafted him, big news for Mitch Gaspard and his program for the 2015 season.
Absolutely. JUCO pitcher out of Walters State Community College. Coming off Tommy John surgery in 2013, only threw 16 innings in 2014. So you hear, okay, well, a JUCO guy only threw 16 innings. I mean, how big a help is he going to be? Well, he's only thrown 16 innings in 2 years, and he was drafted in the 35th round by the Rangers because, from everything we hear, all his camps pre-draft with scouts, they were wowed by his fastball, 92 to 95, a really good curveball. And apparently, from what I hear, the Rangers made a pretty decent run at him for a 35th rounder, even once he was already on campus at Alabama and already taking classes. So you never know. The guy coming off an injury hasn't thrown a lot. But for a team that loses their entire weekend rotation, I mean, that is huge to bring a junior college guy with experience. Look, Alabama landed him over North Carolina and Clemson, two very traditional powers and perennial top 25 teams in the country to get Carter. They had to beat them out. So, you don't see the numbers, but you see all the peripherals, all the scouts being impressed, the schools that wanted him. And I think that tells you a lot about the potential of Carter coming in 2015. And we know Alabama certainly needs starting pitching coming into next year. So could end up being a very, very big pickup for the Crimson Tide.
Don't do a good enough job of giving you a moment to push this. So, again, as the digital managing editor for TideSports.com, what have you guys got coming up that people need to be looking out for?
Yeah, actually, I'm going to put up something today. We're going to take a look at the different, or just sort of see how all the bodies have changed, at least in terms of the roster. Who's gained weight? Who's lost weight? Who's just take a fun look at where these guys have grown in a year, and I think a lot of people are interested to see what kind of changes they've had. So anyway, yeah, I'm on roster duty today. That's what we're looking at.
I'm extremely thankful that they don't carry that out, and you haven't carried that out to the Crimson Tide Sports Network crew. That might not be a good thing for me.